Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Gentle Parents Unite weekly podcast with Sujai Johnson and Vivek Patel. We're really happy to be here with you. We love sharing ideas and concepts and strategies to help you with your parenting, creating deeper and more harmonious relationships with your kids. We've both been working with parents for many, many years, and we love bringing our experience and our love for this work to you. So please grab a cup of tea and a paper and pen to make some notes. Sit back and relax with us as we share some ideas around parenting. Thank you so much.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Gentle Parents. I actually waved when I did that. goodness. That's great. You see, the reason is when I do these podcasts with you, Sujai, and I'm talking to you listeners too, I really feel like I'm really present with y'all. And I actually just waved physically saying hello to you. So I'm going to do it again. And I'm waving again. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Gentle Parents Unite podcast. This is Vivek Patel here. And I'm with my beautiful and wise colleague, Sujai Johnson. Hello, Sujai.
Hi, Vivek. I love you so much. That's amazing. I feel that connection with everybody too when I'm here in this space. I want to just reach out and wave to everybody. Also, we go live with video often, so it's on the same platform, so it kind of makes sense.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. We are always talking to parents, and I think that's one of the beautiful things about my life, really, is that I get a chance to talk to parents multiple times a week, sharing information that can really be helpful to them, that really helps them connect with their kids more, that really helps them understand their kids more, because kids can really seem so hard to understand sometimes, you know, in the way that they are and the choices they make and the things that they focus on. It's just so different from the adult sensibilities and the adult priorities that it can be really, really confusing. And so the more we understand our kids, the more we understand how they think and how they process, the easier it is for us to work with them, the easier it is for us to collaborate with them, the easier it is for us to get ourselves understood by them, because a lot of time adults talk to kids and the things they say just bounce off their heads. It's like it doesn't go in. And we can learn through understanding something about our language, something about our intention, our mindset, and also understanding the way kids process. We can learn to communicate in ways where kids really do hear us more and understand us more. It is possible to do that. But it takes some time, it takes some work, it takes some study. But oh, the payoffs are so worth it. And so, I really want to encourage people to listen to the rest of these podcasts. We're at a year of weekly podcasts. There's a lot of information that we've covered over the last year or so. And really take in that information and check out our other resources. I'll mention it at the end, and it's also in the liner notes. And check out our other resources as well, because we just have a lot of stuff that helps parents tremendously.
Yes, you know, I was thinking about that. There's hardly a question asked in our spaces that I'm not like going, hey, over here, we recorded a podcast.
Right.
And a lot of the topics, because they're so complex and they take a lot of breaking down, we've talked about them, you know, more than once, and we've broken down lots of different angles you can come at them from and different areas that you might want to inspect about them, and really given people a lot of information and on some topics, great starting platforms, and on other topics, we've completely like dissected them inside and out. It's so much amazing material. It just blows my mind.
Yeah, for sure. I feel really grateful for the opportunity to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, you know, with all of the intense stuff that's happening around the world right now with COVID and with the protests happening in the States, and increasing awareness of racial inequity and violence.
You know, Vivek, I was curious. You know, we have what's going on in the States here is definitely a progressed situation. Things have really gotten to certain levels. However, I've been seeing a lot of feedback that a lot of other countries might not be that far behind us. Do you feel like there's civil unrest rising in your country over there in Canada? Do you feel like this thing might project forward with America kind of in the forefront of really championing Black Lives Matter and being that change on racial inequity?
I hope so. I think Canadians tend to be a little bit more, or I should say a little bit less demonstrative than Americans. And I think our, you know, we tend to be a little bit calmer about things. And I'm not saying that's a good thing. I'm just saying that seems to be how it plays out. Although right now the protests are happening all across the country, which is amazing. I'm so proud of my country for it. You know, one of the main issues in Canada is Indigenous rights and the way that the Indigenous population has been treated for years and years and years. We have a terrible history with that. And I think change for that is really slow. And there have been protests, but it's
500 kind of, plus years, yes.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I hope so. I hope that more and more people in Canada, you know, wake up and take on the mantle of social justice. And mm-hmm. I myself have been a extremely dedicated and active social justice activist for just over 30 years now. My social justice activism started in 1989, and when I had my awakening, and which is kind of funny because everybody talks about awake now, but I was talking about it a long time ago, and so I've gone through all sorts of stages and phases with it in my own life and my own the way I work with things, and it's certainly been one of the main aspects of my parenting journey. You know, was to make. To put a real priority on social justice, on fairness, equity, on kindness, on you know, on all that stuff, on kindness and connectedness, and treating everybody, you know, in a way that they deserve to be treated, and at the same time not to ignore the problems of the world and pretend they're not there, because that doesn't help anybody.
And yes, absolutely. You know, a lot of people, it's something that in our large group, Gentle Parents Unite, for those of you listening who aren't familiar with Vivek and I and the work we do, we have a lot of different spaces, all with the same title, Gentle Parents Unite. If you go to Google and put Gentle Parents Unite into Google, you can come up with all of our top spaces. And our largest space is our Facebook parenting group, which has been around for 7+ years now, and it's at over 54,000 members. And we talk about equality and equity and social issues, and as they pertain to LGBTQ and people of color, Black people, people of, you know, anybody who, any kind of issues that are social issues, you know. Our team is a very diverse team, and we are all and have all been for many years social justice activists in our own lives, going to protests and also online in our Facebook pages. And we bring this culture into Gentle Parents Unite, and a lot of people push back against it, and they ask us, you know, they really want to know what social justice has to do with gentle parenting. And why we want to focus so much energy in our space on things that a lot of people, quite honestly, you know, it gets pretty controversial. And a lot of people who are not quite willing to face these issues find it divisive, and they want to know why we're doing this. And it's my truest feeling, and I don't say this with any perpetuation of judgment or hate. It's my truest feeling that isms, you name it, ism that it is, all isms are part of systematic cycles of oppression and abuse. Every single ism. Go down the line, if we're talking about, you know, racism, we're talking about the homophobias and the, you know, all of it, you go down the line, and it's all rooted in systems of oppression and abuse. And unless we're consciously removing ourselves from the problem and consciously taking steps to make that change, we are perpetuating those cycles of violence and abuse, then we will continue through our conditioning to perpetuate cycles of abuse and oppression. And I got to ask myself, and I got to ask you all, the listener, how gentle are you really if what you're teaching your children is to perpetuate cycles of abuse and oppression against other groups of people, and possibly, depending on their demographic, against themselves and their loved ones? And in order to really break, and gentle parenting is trauma-informed parenting. We're not here just trying to, not hit or spank our children. We're here trying to create a better world where our children are not suffering from trauma. And we're trying to work with the mental health of our children around any trauma that may have been suffered, and ourselves around any trauma that we have been through in life, so that we can truly break cycles. Because at its core, gentle parenting is about breaking cycles so that the world can be a healthier place. You know, we don't just want to end this or that or the other just for today. We want our children to grow up with their own empowered value systems where they can, it doesn't get as watered down as our adult ideas that are so tied up and knotted in generations and generations of some really horrible stuff, genocide and homicide and brutality and, all the way from some of the worst possible things you can think of, all the way down to microaggressions and daily discomforts and people wondering if they're safe in a place because somebody's beliefs are intense enough that they could cause another person emotional, physical, mental harm and trauma. And so when people ask me what social justice and understanding social culture and understanding what's going on with minority groups from the voices of the minorities themselves, that is what gentle parenting is, truly, because it is about breaking that cycle of trauma.
Yeah, and, children are, and I often say this, that children are one of the largest, if not perhaps the largest, demographic of oppressed, marginalized people in the world. And we don't often think of kids that way, largely because the mainstream way of looking at kids is that they're not quite fully human, and then so to think of them as oppressed and marginalized, people scoff at that idea. I get scoffed at on a daily basis when I talk about this stuff, so I know about the scoffing. And the reason that we scoff is it's like, oh, they're just kids. Oh, you have to control them, otherwise, how they're going to run wild. And oh, it's our responsibility to teach them, so we have to. And this is idea that we have to treat them less than human, with less respect, less integrity, less dignity, because they're kids and they don't know what to do, and we have to teach them. We have a responsibility. And this idea has excused a lot of violence, a lot. And when I say violence, I don't only mean spanking, because violence comes in many forms: emotional violence, social violence, relational violence, all sorts of things. And so this idea that we have to treat kids this way has been an excuse for a lot of violence towards children all throughout history, and certainly all throughout the world to this very day. Go on to any post that on a public parent page with a kid that's misbehaving, and 90% of the comments are going to be smack that kid. Oh, just bring that kid to me. I wouldn't stand that. No kid would do that with me. Oh, my kid would never get away with that. Or when I was young, I knew to respect my elders because I'd get a smack across the face if I did. And all this kind of stuff. Like, it's so ingrained into our consciousness that kids deserve this, that it's the right way to treat young people. And we wonder why violence gets perpetuated in our world. Because
When people talk about that in the way that you were just talking about it, it really brings up for me and reminds me that, you know, I'm 44 years old. I was born in 1976. And if you go back on the timeline of women's rights, they were having this exact same conversation about women the year that I was born.
Right.
Mind-blowing, you know, the exact same conversation that they need it to be able to behave and they should listen to authority and almost the same words verbatim if you look back at some of the historical things that were actually recorded on paper and stuff. There's some older newspaper articles that talk about their wives in the exact same way that we are today talking about children.
Yeah, for sure. There's a video on YouTube of Sean Connery talking about that. Have you seen that video?
I have not.
It's terrible. He's being interviewed, and he straight up says that men have to be able to smack their wives to put them in their place because sometimes they speak back and they need to be taught. It's terrifying. Right. Yeah, it's terrifying. And that's really not long ago, Sujai.
Sean Connery is what, you know, maybe 15 or 20 years older than I, and, you know,
right.
Very much a throwback from that mindset. And for whatever reason, he's chosen not to move past that mindset in the last 44 years, which is terribly distressing that, you know, he could have been alive through all of the change that came about. That's really when we get into the area of cognitive dissonance. You know, people have, they have the information, they've seen it all. And at this point, they're rejecting the facts. And I feel really similar about a lot of people who are still pushing it back against Black Lives Matter. It's like, Black Lives Matter is not a new movement. I believe that Black Lives Matter was founded after the murder of Trayvon Martin. And I believe that was 2008. I'm not exactly sure. But, you know, it's long enough ago that we've had time to process any feelings of all lives matter or any feelings of, you know, what about white people and all of these things. Black Lives Matter is a movement that was created to speak out against police brutality against Black folk, and particularly Black men. And it's been here long enough that if somebody doesn't really understand Black Lives Matter and still wants to hang out in this whataboutism, I'm having a really hard time myself, and I keep advocating and I keep trying to talk to them, but I'm having a really hard time understanding that, you know, there's this song, If You Don't Know Me By Now, never, never, never know. And it comes up for me around this stuff when people are like, you know, Sean Connery and like all of these what about white people going on and the All Lives Matter people. And I'm thinking, you know, if you haven't figured this out by now, you're purposely sidestepping the fact.
Right. Right. And, you know, I think that is one of the most, it's mentioning cognitive dissonance is so important because I think it's one of the things that we can really help our kids with. You know, I mean, I think that kids learn that way of closing their minds early as a self-protective mechanism because a lot of the things adults say are rooted in that cognitive dissonance. You know, like we say, we tell kids they have to have respect and then we hit them. We tell kids they have to respect other people's belongings, and then we take away their iPod. We tell kids they shouldn't use force to get their way, and then put them in their rooms if they don't do what we say. And right from the very beginning, or we tell them to speak nicely, and then we yell at them, right? And then so over and over and over and over again, they learn the lesson of an inconsistent value system, and that this is what this is normal, this is natural. It doesn't occur to them to seek out that consistency in themselves and in their own lives and in their own behaviors, matching their values with their behaviors and their thoughts and their feelings with their principles and their priorities and all of that stuff. They don't learn that really important stuff, you know, about how to be a conscious, caring, compassionate, self-aware human walking in the world. I mean, that seems to me a pretty intense an important thing to teach a kid, but that's not what we teach kids. We teach kids how to be quiet and how to pay attention and how to follow the rules and how to do what we say. And we certainly don't teach them through deep relationship and deep communication and deep connection. And so that's one of the things that I think is most important for us to teach kids. When I was planning to do this podcast, I told my daughter I want to talk to people about how to inspire your kids to want to change the world. And I think this is so important that we have the opportunity to help our kids know that they can have a real impact in making the world a better place. And I asked her, what do you think? My daughter's 23, by the way, for those that don't know, my daughter's 23 and has been brought up in this gentle parenting philosophy from the very beginning. Never punished, never given a consequence, never told that she was wrong. Always, everything that we did was always working together using communication and collaboration and connection. And it seems like something from another planet for most people. And it seems even dangerous and irresponsible. I recently got told that by somebody that the way I teach about parenting is teaching parental neglect, which I just love, because then what we share is about being more involved in our kids' lives and maintaining that involvement throughout their whole lives, as opposed to the more mainstream way where kids just pull away. And we lose our influence. But anyways, I asked her, what do you think is the most important thing that I could share? Or what is something important that I could share with people? And she says, Dad, you know, one of the things is your one-liner that says, I didn't teach my daughter what to think. I taught her how to think. So that's one of the most important things I think that you have done as a parent with me, is you didn't tell me what to think, but you did teach me how to think. You taught me how to look at situations, how to analyze what I see in the media, how to analyze what I see in my relationships and in relationships that I observe, how to analyze, the government and different systems that I engage with. Right from the very beginning, we were doing that. And when I say beginning, I mean kindergarten. When she would go to kindergarten in school, we talked about the things that she would see there. We talked about the way adults were treating the kids. We talked about what rules meant and why they existed. And when I would talk to her about rules, and even at that young age, I didn't tell her she needed to obey the rules or she would get in trouble. I said, if she didn't obey the rules, she might get in trouble, and getting in trouble could look like this and this. And then you make the decision if that's something that's worth it to you to break that particular rule. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. And then when you decide to break the rule or follow the rule, do it because it makes sense to you, because you've thought about it and you think this is right, or you think this isn't right for you, and you're going to stand up and do what's right for you. And then be willing to recognize that you have to be willing to accept what comes with that decision. And we talked about that, and even engaging with the consequences we talked about. You know, just because a teacher says you have to go to detention doesn't mean you have to go into that room. It doesn't mean that. You can walk away. You always have choice, and you have a choice to think about how you engage with rules, how you engage with systems, paying attention to your own values and your own principles. And so we would talk about all this kind of stuff right from the youngest age, when she was engaging with those systems. I didn't want her to do so unaware. I didn't want her to do so disempowered. I wanted her to understand her power, and also to understand the situation other people were in. So then we would also talk about, hey, you know, at the same time, it's important to recognize that teachers have jobs and it's hard for them. They have to take care of 30 kids. So they're not always going to do the things that are going to make the most sense. And we have to also have compassion for them. But that compassion has to also be tempered with boundaries and with discernment. So like it's complex, right? And we think, oh, my kid's just going to kindergarten, I can't talk to them about this kind of thing. But I haven't met a kindergartner yet. And I've worked with a lot of kindergartners. I haven't met a kindergartner yet that I haven't been able to have this kind of conversation with. This idea of wanting to teach our kids how to think is a completely different mindset. And, you know, when we have that mindset, it means that we need to be evaluating all of our decisions with our kids and seeing if that's the focus that we have. So when your kid throws food on the floor, for example, or refuses to brush their teeth, for example, or doesn't want to go to bed, or doesn't want to do their homework, or you ask them to clean something up and they say no, so many things like that that come up in a parent's, in a family's life, right? And we, and you know, like Sujai mentioned earlier, our group has 54,000 people in it. So that's a pretty large sample size. We've been watching this large group of people share their struggles and share their experiences for many years. And so we've seen a lot of the patterns. And so when you, when those kind of things come up with your kids, and maybe when they're a little bit older, it's other things, right? They want to hang out with friends. They don't want to come home on time. You give them a curfew and they stay out past the curfew, or they argue with it, or they want to go to a party that you don't want them to go to. Or maybe they just talk rudely to you. All sorts of things. Hanging around with the crowd you don't want them to hang around with. Like, the list goes on and on and on. Every time we engage with our kids in one of those moments, are we engaging with them in a way that's trying to tell them what to think, or trying to help them learn how to think? And learning how to think means that we give them principles, we help them understand all the different aspects, like I was talking about with school, right? All the different aspects of a situation. Tune into their own values. Well, you know, what is important to you? What kind of person do you want to be? Who do you think you are? How do you want to walk in the world? What kind of relationships do you want? You know, what kind of impact do you want to have on other people and in the world? And you help them understand all these things. Then you say, now take all that information and make a decision, process it, and come to me with your decision, and then we'll look at it together. So that we're always, is a freedom in this, right? It's teaching someone how to think necessarily has to include a certain amount of freedom. And part of that freedom is that maybe they will make decisions that cause them some harm in the end, or even cause other people some harm in the end. It's part of the learning process. I've caused people harm all throughout my life as part of my learning process. You know, the only reason I am the kind of person I am today, the only reason that I know the stuff that I know and I'm doing this work is because, well, honestly, the only reason, but one large contributing factor is how many people I've hurt and all the mistakes I've made. And then, of course, I reflected on them and I've learned from them and I'm trying to do better. But still, I had to make a whole bunch of mistakes to learn those things, you know, and then we punish our kids for their mistakes. Or we try and control them so that they don't make those mistakes. And none of that is really teaching them how to think. And so I think this is really important. And so in wanting to inspire our kids, one of the most important things we can do is model for them. I teach a system of relationship with our kids. I call it the 3x3 relationship. And it's a way of replacing the relationship of the authority figure in our kids' lives. You know, a lot of parents say, oh, I'm not your friend, I'm your parent. And I saw my sister sent me this meme the other day on Messenger, because she knows me. She sent me this meme where it said, your job isn't to make your kids happy, it's to make them a functioning and well-behaved human being, or something like that. And, your job isn't to have your kids like you. That's what it was. Your job isn't to have your kids like you. It doesn't matter whether they like you or not. Your job is to make them into a decent human being. I think it was something like that. And I was like, in the chat in response, I was swearing all over the place that I was like, because that attitude causes disconnection. It causes, resistance, and it causes, kids to lose themselves, to lose who they are. And it's really painful. So the 3x3 relationships that I teach are, the first three are model, guide, and friend. And the second three is relationship with parent, relationship with self, and relationship with environment. And these relationships are really important. And when we focus on these relationships, it really shifts how we interact with our kids. And for inspiring them, to have an attitude where they want to do good in the world, where they want to shift the way things are, where they want to make a difference, one of the most important things is the way we model. Modeling how we walk in the world, the way we are in our relationships, the way we respond when other people are suffering or having a hard time in life. All of these things are have a huge impact on how our kids are going to see themselves and see how they want to walk in the world, because they are always watching us. They're watching everything that we do and everything that we say. And even when we're not in their presence, they're still watching, partially because they're connected to us, and partially because everything that we do, the memory and the residue of that is left in who we are. And then who we are comes home with our kids, and they know who we are. They see who we are. You know, it's really hard to lie to our kids. Even if we think we're doing a good job, on the inside, they're feeling us, you know. And I'm sure if you have a connected relationship with your kid, you can tell that they know you. They know when you're upset. They know when you're happy. They know what you're feeling. They know what you're thinking to a large degree. And then behind the scenes, they know a heck of a lot more than we recognize that they do. And so inspiring our kids is really about, largely about how we engage with the world. And it's also about how we, and the modeling is not only what we do, but it's also what we say. There's something that I call modeling out loud, where you do a thing, but you also talk about it. Talking about it, of course, means with no pressure, with no expectation, just offering information. And there's a story that I absolutely love. And I think maybe I told it on a podcast in the past, but I'm going to tell it again anyways. There's this story that I love where a few years ago, it was in 2015, actually. And I know it's 2015 because I wrote the story in one of my blog posts. And my blog is meaningfulideas.com, by the way, if you want to check out my blog. I have almost 400 articles there. And all of them are from 2015, pretty much. There's a couple since and a couple before, but like 90% of them are from 2015. Because I had made a commitment to write every day for a year, and I wrote a blog post every day of the year for 2015. I didn't miss a day. So there's a lot of information up there. And what I did, so one day my daughter and I were out shopping. We were out shopping on Orpheus Road, which is a road that has a bunch of outlet stores. And we were in this store, this clothing store that she really likes. And we were in there, we were buying some stuff, and we came out. And just as we walked out the door, we heard this woman scream. She went, "Ah!" And we looked, and this old woman and her daughter were standing there. And the daughter was older than me at the time. I was 46, but she was even older than me at the time. And so there was a little bit older ladies, and they screamed. And I saw what happened was a big gust of wind. It was a really windy day, and a big gust of wind had blown this woman's wig off of her head. and they were screaming out, and they were too old to run after it. It was going fast. It actually looked like a little animal scurrying along the ground. And I looked at my daughter and I said, "I'm going after it." And she nodded and she said, "Okay." And I ran after this wig. And it really, I was like, I was chasing a little raccoon or something. And every time I was just about to get on and grab it, it would, like, this gust of wind would blow it farther out of my reach. And I'm like, I'm dead serious, determined, chasing after this wig. And finally, I realized it was like nature had it in for me. I was going to keep blowing this wig out of my reach. And finally, I did this diving roll, dove through the air. And I'm a martial artist, so I can do diving rolls pretty good. And I did a diving roll, dove through the air, skinned up my elbows a little bit, grabbed this wig. And I stood up and held it up in the air in, like, triumphant. And then everybody was clapping. And it was this really joyous moment. And I kind of jogged back over to where the ladies were. And they were like, "Oh, Sunny, thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you for helping me out." And they were so grateful. And there was just this moment of real human connection there. You know, they could tell that they could feel that I did that just out of wanting to help another human. Right. And they just felt so grateful. And we just had a beautiful, beautiful moment together. And then my kid and I got in the car, and I didn't immediately turn to her and say, "See, that's how you should treat people. That's what you should do. You got to do like that." And this, blah, blah, blah. I didn't give a lecture. I never gave a lecture. I mean, I'm a very lecture aversion. What's the word I'm looking for? Aversion? That's not a word, is it? Aversive? I don't like lectures. Let me just say that. I don't like giving lectures. But what I did do was I said, "Oh, that felt so good. I feel so energized right now. I love helping people. And it was just so exciting to do that. And the look on their faces and the energy that they had, it just made me so happy. I feel so good right now. And I'm really glad that you were here to witness that and to be part of this with me. I'm just so glad when we get a chance to do these kind of things together." And she was like, "Yeah, that was awesome, Dad." And I was like, "Yeah, it really was awesome." And we just had this so the whole ride. And then we came home, of course, and we told Mom about the experience, and we got to relive it again. So again, we got to relive the experience the emotions of it again, receive her reflection. And this was such an inspiring moment. I mean, I'm still inspired by it, 5 years later. It was inspiring for all of us at the time. And it's moments like that that can be really powerful and impactful in helping our kids, learn about themselves and learn about their values and experience their world in a different way, and look at the world in a different way.
Yes, it's so amazing. And you were talking about how people, there's this mindset that it's our job to teach our children. I really want to pipe in there because there's so much I have to say on the topic. I know that you and I dived into my opinions on this a little bit just before the call. And one of the things that I feel the most strongly about that statement is that it is not our job to teach our children how to be good people, because our children are truly in the most innocent form of the word, already good people. We do hold a responsibility to our children to teach them social decorum, how to get by in social situations, to teach them certain things that can help them get by in society. However, I really strongly feel at the core of my being that children have the strongest sense of rightness and justice that we as adults, actually, we lose it over time. I was speculating how when I was 8 years old and I first learned about racism, and I remember feeling this deep feeling of disgust that people would treat people differently simply based on the color of their skin. And, you know, I carry that feeling of disgust with me. However, over the years, as a self-protective mechanism, as ways to build walls from carrying around the pain of the world with me, of course, I found ways to disassociate a little bit from that pain. But as a child, that pain came to me so raw and pure. And our children are that way. They see these injustices. They're not born with racism in them. They're not born with hate in them. They're not, you know, a child who's two that's hitting is a developmental stage as they're learning social behavioral skills and the way to get by in society and how to get the things that they need. And, you know, hitting isn't the greatest tool, but it's one that is fairly effective for a two-year-old, as you know, and as they grow, they learn that there's other tools that they can use that are far better relational tools, and that, as our job as parents, is to keep helping them with those relational tools. However, the idea that we need to make our children good people is out of this world to me. In fact, if we can slow down enough and listen and learn and pay attention, it's our children who can teach us how to be good people. And I, in my own journey, there's no truer truth that slowing down and stopping and allowing my children to speak their truth and hearing their voices and making adjustments and changes to myself and my life. And my children have been the biggest precursor to my own growth and my own change and the most positive things in my life. And truly, my children, above all, have taught me how to be a good person. And that wasn't their job.
Yeah, I hear you. I actually think that is one of the purposes of our children's lives in a way, you know. I don't know, it's maybe not their job, but it's certainly, I think, a great opportunity for us. I always interacted with my kid very much as if we were learning together, and that the things that she had to teach me were just as valuable, if not more valuable, than the things that I was teaching her. You know, I used to say that I can teach my kid not to get hit by a car and to eat with a fork, but she teaches me about unconditional love and about unrestrained emotional experience and all sorts of really powerful, beautiful things, curiosity and play. And like you said, justice, you know, fairness. Kids have a strong, strong sense of fairness. And this
they
is something
do.
That, yeah. And they always
Didn't
say,
you say that the other day when we were talking, you said something about It's one of the main lines. That's not fair.
Right, right. That's what kids say all the time, right?
Yeah.
And as parents, a lot of the time, what we do is we talk them out of that. We try and talk them out of it, or we tell them they're wrong to think that, or not to be worried about fairness, or let's share. Don't worry about it. Doesn't matter if it's fair.
Or even worse, exactly, we completely invalidate it and we say something like, well, the world isn't a fair place.
Right, right, right. And all of this, what it does is it teaches them that they can perpetuate that unfairness instead of and the opposite, which would be to help them embrace that feeling, to value that feeling of fairness, and then help them learn how to direct it, how to evaluate what they see in their life, how to evaluate their own sense of how they treat other people, but also how they're treated, and also about how other people are treated, to evaluate it through that lens of fairness, wanting people to be treated fairly, kindly, equally, in all situations and in all systems. And it's a beautiful thing. It's a powerful thing. And one of the ways that we can really help them become aware of social justice and aware of their own desire to help and shift and change the world is by acknowledging and validating their desire for fairness. Because then we can show them how fairness is a strength. We can show them all sorts of places in society where fairness is absent and how they can contribute to increasing the fairness. That's why, like you were saying, Black Lives Matter was formed because there's unfairness in race, there's unfairness in gender, there's unfairness in sexual orientation, and there's unfairness in ableness, and there's unfairness in age. And age is the one they would get the most right away. Because kids know they're not treated fairly because of their age. It's pretty darn clear if you're a kid that you're not treated fairly because of your age.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I remember one-liners that my parents used to use that really highlighted that, such as, well, when you're an adult, you can have an opinion, or I'm the adult, I pay the bills. So, this is my opinion now. And I remember one specific situation where I was like 10 or 12 or something, and I was arguing with my mom, and I knew I was right.
Yeah.
And she said something like, to really shut me down, like, I'm the mom, so what I say goes, kind of a thing.
Right.
And I remember looking at her and saying, when do I get to be right? And
right.
She said to me, when you're a parent yourself.
Uh-huh. I hate that. Oh my God. So dismissive, And it's a cycle, right? Then we say that to our kids, and then they say it to their kids, and then this whole cycle is continued where nobody gets heard, nobody gets validated. And then we spend the rest of our lives seeking that validation from the external, which really sucks.
Yeah.
I've screwed so many of my relationships and so many of my friendships with that.
Validation.
Yeah.
Now that is a whole nother topic that I think I can really dive into. Hear the excitement in my voice.
I do.
I think in my own insecurities, I needed a lot of that for a really long time. And I've gotten to this place where, and you know what, it for me, and we talked about this with Selena Robinson on last week's episode quite a bit. We talked about how defining our values is really an important part of this journey. And for me, I think defining my values clarified why I felt uncomfortable in certain situations and, particularly with microaggressions and things like that, and things that might be a little bit more obscure, but clarifying my values somehow gave me like this direct tap to an inline sight of why something was making me uncomfortable. And sometimes that discomfort could be coming right from inside myself. And sometimes that discomfort could actually be coming from the external source, right? Because these things aren't cut and dry and each relationship is different. But, what I realized in defining my values, I found all of my personal power, and I feel so confident in the choices I make. And even when I make a wrong choice, or not a wrong choice, or maybe a choice that has some kind of a backlash that I'm not happy about, or maybe a decision that, you know, I need to redirect or change or anything like that. It's all part of my value system. It's all correcting myself is part of my value system. So I'm ready to evaluate that, and I'm ready to have a look at it. And it's so empowering. What we find on the other side is, like, we find so much importance in the things that we choose to do with ourselves and our lives. And anybody who pushes back against that, we just don't hold space for it in the exact same way that we would have when we really needed to be a people pleaser.
And imagine if you grew up with that being the focus of what your parents wanted to impart you with, right, from the very beginning, how different that would be, how different our lives would have turned out.
Well, Vietzum gave us some insights to that too. Your daughter, when we talked, she definitely gave some insights to those feelings of personal empowerment and feeling completely, you know, the flip side of not having to go through this work to get to where we are today. You know, you and I, we worked our asses off.
Yeah.
We had to uncondition a bunch of conditioning, and we had to question everything we knew. We had to disassociate from certain relationships, draw ourselves away from certain people. We had to, right, you know, rearrange our entire lives in order to feel good and comfortable.
Right.
And, you know, here's Vietz, a 22-year-old person who is so confident and secure in who she is, and she doesn't exude something that comes, you know, and we also talked about that, you know, she doesn't exude something that's selfish or self-serving or self-centered. In fact, she's the very image of graciousness and kindness.
For sure.
You know.
For sure. Yeah.
It's just such an amazing image. I really encourage anybody who's listening to go back and have a little listen to those episodes that we put out in season 3 and about halfway through this season 4. I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 episodes back. We had another interview with her. So you guys, you folks should definitely head over there and check those out.
Yeah, definitely. Listening to my daughter speak of her experience being raised this way and the way her mind works, the way she processes things, it's so profound. And I really appreciate her insights. And you, what you said, that she's the opposite of selfish, is so fascinating, because everybody, when she was growing up, everybody was telling me, oh, she's going to be selfish. Oh, she's going to be, rude and entitled and arrogant. And she really genuinely is the opposite of that, you know, and the beautiful thing is it's a balanced opposite, because I know some people who are generous, but they're generous because they feel they have to be generous in order to be a good person, because that's what they were told. And when they weren't generous, they were criticized. And so they got it in their heads that in order to be accepted, they have to be generous. This is so, I think, toxic, you know. But
it is. And a lot of times people think that if they're generous, it'll make people like them. And
right.
As somebody who was definitely a people pleaser at one point, going through those motions of giving so that somebody likes you is one of the most physically damaging, because a lot of times we'll give away things that we actually needed for our,
yes,
you know, like needs, not just wants and desires, because somebody who's a people pleaser will tend to give beyond their own means, you know, the shirt off my back kind of a person, which is very kind and generous. However, not when it's to your own detriment, and particularly when it's to your own detriment on the emotional level of the kinds of people who would actually take the shirt off your back. Most people don't really need the shirt off your back.
Right, right.
If they took the shirt off your back, they'd probably want to, you know, give back energetically if it was not a toxic relationship. But the kinds of people who are doing that are often using that generousness and kindness and your inability or discomfort with saying no.
For sure. Yeah, thanks for saying that about the difficulty of saying no. You know, that's something that I really wanted to make sure that my kid felt really comfortable with. You know, most of the time she doesn't. Even if she, for example, with food, food's a good example. If she buys like a box of Smarties or something and she's really excited about it and she wants to eat the whole thing, most of the time she'll still share those Smarties with her mom and I. And she'll offer us, and even if it's like a bit of a struggle for her, she'll still do it. And it's amazing to see. And even if she says no, she doesn't want to share, usually a few minutes later she'll come out and she'll share. And the other day she made some nachos, and she was putting them on her plate, and I was kind of helping her because they were like big swaths of melted cheese, so we were kind of doing it together. And there was one nacho left on the plate. And I said, "Ooh, I'm going to take that one." And she said, "No, I want all of them." And I was just, I mean, when she says that, I'm just thrilled, right? I'm thrilled because I want her to know herself, and I want her to know her boundaries and her desires, and I want her to respect them. And knowing that most of the time her choice is the opposite, that I knew that if she really wanted that, it really was something meaningful to her. And it was my joy to join with her in that. And she knows that when she says no to me like that, that I take it as joy. I take it as a gift. And so she's comfortable saying it, which also means she doesn't say it when she doesn't need to. And actually she makes the effort to say yes most of the time. But she also knows her boundaries, and she also knows who she is, and she accepts that and she honors that. And it's such a beautiful balanced combination. And I think that's really powerful and really important. Because then if we can help our kids know themselves like that and respect themselves and honor themselves, then when they go out into the world, their natural inclination is going to want to be to honor other people as well. And this is where, you know, we kind of started by talking about all of the challenging social justice issues in the world that are happening, and how our kids can want to get engaged in them. And I think this is really important, that when we do that kind of work with our kids, when we want to help them discover the kind of people they want to be and how to engage in the world, that we do it from an inside out way. We do it without force. We do it by joining with them in the exploration of the world and their exploration of who they are. And it's harder because we're not taught that. We don't know that. We know force. We know coercion. We know control. But we can learn a different way. And I really want to encourage everybody out there that's listening to please put the effort into shifting the way you look at things, the way you work with your kids, and the way you look at how learning values takes place, and try and be an inspiration to your kids rather than, someone who lectures and controls. Try and be an inspiration, be a model, be a guide, and be a friend. And if you can put those three things together, you'll find incredible, miraculous things happening between you and your kids.
I would add to trust in their voices and their process, and to listen to them, and to remember that our children truly are good and truly have within them what it takes to treat other human beings with respect. And we ourselves have so much to learn from our children.
So true. I love hearing the sound of your kid's voice there, Sujai. He's so beautiful. All right, my friends, thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate you spending this time with us and being open to learning and growing with us.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We'd love for you to find us on social media. You can find our big parenting group, Gentle Parents Unite, on Facebook. And we also have a public page, also called Gentle Parents Unite. Our membership site, where we do more personal, intimate parenting support services and coaching and meditations and different things that we have, all geared towards really supporting parents in a really intense and personal way. You can just type in gentleparentsunite.com and you can find us there. Vivek's articles and videos can be found at Meaningful Ideas. Over 60 videos, and between my blog and my Facebook page, about 500 articles. And we wish you all the best, and we'll see you next week. Thank you so much.